Breathe life into your own backyard this spring with FastGrowingTrees.com. From shade trees to fresh fruit to privacy hedge plants, let FastGrowingTrees.com help you plant your dream garden with their expert advice and fast, reliable shipping. FastGrowingTrees.com's plant experts curate thousands of easy-to-grow plants, shrubs, and tree varieties for your unique climate. And they understand that sometimes it's hard to know which plants will do best. No problem. With FastGrowingTrees.com, you get customized recommendations based on your specific needs, and they're always available to help keep your plants growing healthy through every season. Their website is easy to use, and the shipping's fast. With FastGrowingTrees' 30-day Alive and Thrive Guarantee, you know everything will look great fresh out of the box. So join over 1.5 million happy Fast Growing Trees customers. Visit FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana now and get 15% off your entire order. Get 15% off at FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana. That's FastGrowingTrees.com/Dana.
Returned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. Under New York State law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and an intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about. 34 false statements made to cover up other crimes. These are felony crimes in New York State, no matter who you are. We cannot and will not normalize serious criminal conduct.
So that was Alvin Bragg remarking yesterday after the unsealing of the indictment. And the incredibly laughable. And the issue I think that everybody has is, what's the other crime? So welcome to the program. Happy Wednesday to you. We got some technical issues that we're dealing with equipment-wise. Good to be with you this Wednesday, Dana Lash. I'm going to get to, and if you hear my voice crack at all, I'm dealing with serious, I'm fighting a little, trying to stave off laryngitis brought on by cedar allergies. So we're a little bit on the struggle bus today, so bear with me if I sound a little even more even-keeled today than I normally do. But the situation, and there's a good piece up at Substack about this yesterday, up at Chapter and Verse about all of this, that gets into some of the criticisms about this indictment and some of what this ultimately means and how, you know, what this is going to mean going forward. And I maintain that I do not see this case, how do I put, not being dismissed. There's no way it's not dismissed. There's no way that it's not dismissed. It's just not going to happen. And so to this point, this, and I'm looking at, the indictment was unsealed. They had the statement of facts, all this. I mean, the issue, I've written about it. We've talked about it on the program. We've got into all of this. How are you making this charge and elevating this to a felony when you're not even actually stating what the secondary crime is? It's almost like, well, we have to prosecute it in order to find out what's in it. I mean, that's, you know, sort of the thing with it. 34 counts, and they're all tied to this. I mean, they're all tied to an unspecified action that he's, that's the issue. That's my huge problem with this. Like, how is this even, and, you know, we talked to Andy McCarthy about this the other day, and he was even, you know, he was scratching his head. All of, I think, the legal realm is scratching their heads with this, because they're trying to figure out how in the world you justify this before a judge. And I don't see a judge being okay with not knowing what the other crime is that's elevating this, or not having this stated in the statement of facts. And so, I mean, it's just mind boggling. So that is the latest. The indictment has been unsealed. You had 34, and we explained to you the charges, the 34 charges, and how it's ultimately just the penalization of move after move after move within the same charge. It's the same offense, but they're trying to squeeze as much out of it as possible. And it's because Alvin Bragg doesn't have anything. He doesn't have anything. Even the left is having to say that he doesn't have anything. I mean, he doesn't. So, and when I'm able to get those cuts and able to hear them, we'll be able to play those for you. But, I mean, even he, I mean, everyone was saying, I mean, all across, even CNN to Axios to Slate. I'm looking down just at some of what I have here. I mean, it's crazy. There's not a single, no one is agreeing with this. Nobody is. So there really isn't, and we talked about some of the threats with this yesterday too, with regards to how this is going to exhaust, voters on the right, how this is going to exhaust them. I want to play this cut from CNN if we can get this up, because this was CNN even saying that there's really no there. There's no charge there. There's nothing here. I mean, when you've lost even CNN, listen to this. This is wild. Well, we don't have this? Do we not have this cut? Okay. Well, I have it on Substack. If you go to my newsletter, we have it up there. Chapter and verse, it was sent out this morning. So we have the cut in. And everyone from John Bolton to Jake Tapper, 34 counts, they said it was a little underwhelming, is how they put it with this. 34 counts, they said, in terms of a case being brought against a former president, it's a little underwhelming. And they had John Bolton on the panel. John Bolton can't stand Trump. And even he was saying that this is, he's like, there's no way that it's not dismissed. Everyone's agreeing that there's no way that this is not dismissed. It's just not possible. So everyone from, and I have a ton of other examples of this. I mean, everybody across the board, even over at Axios, they were even hitting this, saying that Trump, in other words, actually this one's Vox. They're saying, quote, Trump, in other words, is not being charged for the payments to Daniels themselves. Most of the time, paying someone to keep quiet about something is not a crime. He's not being charged with campaign finance violations either. They said, they added, after he left office in 2021, federal prosecutors reportedly considered charging Trump with a campaign finance violation, but ultimately decided against it. Instead, they say Trump is accused of violating a state law that makes it a crime to falsify business records with the intent to defraud, and doing so specifically to conceal another crime, the federal legal violations. This was at the heart of Cohen's conviction. But here's the thing. Bragg claims that the concealed records thing violated New York election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means. But the problem in the indictment and then the statement of facts that goes with it is that this isn't mentioned at all in those. It's not mentioned anywhere in it. So now you see why there are legitimate claims that are being brought from the left on this. I mean, this is, and I think one of the reasons why the left is so concerned is they realize that some of the more activist wing of their side have gotten so far over their skis on this that this is going to be dismissed. But now I'm going to add, this isn't the only one that's going to come. There's expected to be another indictment with regards to Mar-a-Lago, and there's expected to be another indictment with regards to Georgia. So if this collapses in court, and I think they said that it's not going to go, in fact, to court until December, which is nuts. But if this collapses in court, I think it also is going to draw into question it's going to make everyone question the legitimacy of all the other stuff. Is the problem. So this is, I mean, it's kind of crazy to watch this, to watch how this happens. Listen to this. This is, so this is one of the CNN cuts. This is John Bolton, audio soundbite 23.
For you, one big picture, what do you think of the indictment?
Well, speaking as someone who very strongly does not want Donald Trump to get the Republican presidential nomination, I'm extraordinarily distressed by this document. I think this is even weaker than I feared it would be. And I think it's easily subject to being dismissed or a quick acquittal for Trump.
I don't think it's even going to go so far as to be an acquittal. I think it's going to be dismissed. That's what I think. I think it's going to be dismissed. I just can't see, because he has to be able to argue why it's increased to a felony. He's got to be able to argue that, and he's not arguing that in the case. So I have some major questions here. We're going to come back to this because there's a lot more, but there are a couple of other things that are really important, and I'm actually a little aggravated at one of them. Now, all we've done is just talk about how, you know, the importance of the Wisconsin race, because Wisconsin's incredibly important. Now, you know that they had a battle. The big battle on the ballot was the battle that they had over their Supreme Court, because everything from photo ID to mail-in ballots, like absolutely everything was on the ballot here. And you can't have, you know, Wisconsin is a part of the string of states that Republicans have to be able to have competitive for them in order to win offices. This was not close. And there are two aspects of this, both of which infuriate me. One, which sends me into a white hot rage. The first is that, I mean, there was a 30% voter turnout. The reason Democrats win is because Republicans don't show up. And I know that I hear from a lot of operatives, the golden rule in talking about politics is that you don't criticize voters and you don't say anything to voters. But I'm so done with that, because I'm not coddling people. I've never been interested in coddling people. And I think sometimes we need to have a real come to Jesus conversation. 30% turnout is insane with something as important as this. They have the progressive Janet Protasiewicz, who's got a million consonants in her name. She beat the former state Supreme Court Justice Dan Kelly yesterday. She won by double digits. So now progressives have a 4-3 advantage on a Supreme Court. The thing that I'm most concerned about, I mean, there's a number of issues that I find that are very concerning that the Supreme Court in Wisconsin is going to have to deal with. But the biggest, I think, that's going to have the most immediately measured impact is that of what's happening with voting. Because the mail-in ballots and all of this reduction in integrity and protection for ballots that was reduced because of all of these emergency authorizations that happened due to the coronavirus lockdown, a lot of these states, like Georgia, for instance, they actually codified these. They changed their state constitution and included them into how they conduct their elections. And that's, I mean, it's a problem, especially if you're dropping things like signature matching and all of that, which, I mean, who knows what they're going to do? This was the most expensive judicial election, we talked about this yesterday, in U.S. history. And, I mean, it was a weird campaign. I was talking to a friend of mine who is an activist in Wisconsin and was very involved in all of this. And she was saying that neither of the candidates could run good campaigns, but it didn't matter because it was about the seat on the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. But it didn't help Kelly, and it didn't help the other. I mean, neither of them really helped, and it ended up hurting Kelly more. I mean, it was kind of a mess. It was a mess. And the 30% voter turnout. And I don't know. We've got to dissect this a little bit. The second part of this, and we're going to talk about this after headlines, is Ronna McDaniel was on television this morning giving a dissection of this, doing a postmortem. And she was saying that abortion was one of the big issues, and that clearly the messaging was the problem here. That's literally what she said, and we're going to play the audio of that. How do you say that when you watch what happened in Florida? How do you say that when just this week DeSantis signed into law a 6-week abortion ban? How in the world? Seriously? Don't forget who supported her for chair. If you're a bacon lover, today is your day. So whether alongside your eggs for breakfast, on a BLT, or wrapped around a filet, bacon is free for a year at Good Ranchers. Subscribe to get 24 ounces of Applewood smoked bacon added to each delicious box for a year. That's over $200 worth of bacon free. This is 100% American, high-quality bacon sourced from local farms with no added hormones or antibiotics. To subscribe, simply find your perfect box in the Good Ranchers curated selection of pasture-raised meat and wild-caught seafood. Select the frequency that works best for you, and then enjoy fewer trips to the meat aisle and more flavor at dinner. As long as you stay subscribed, your price will never increase. That's the Good Ranchers price lock guarantee. Subscribe today at goodranchers.com for free bacon in every box for a year. Use code Dana to get an additional $20 off your first order. Get the best meat America has to offer. Visit goodranchers.com. That's goodranchers.com, code Dana. Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I don't know. Sometimes these stories just do make me smile. A giant red spoon was stolen from a Phoenix Dairy Queen, and it was found, although suspects are still being sought by police. It was a 15-foot-tall statue, a red spoon, stolen from a Dairy Queen. They said the thieves took off with it sometime towards the end of March. It has about, this spoon is worth over $3,500. So this guy, Michael Foster, said he was outside playing Pokemon Go on the, and it's going to make sense. Hang on. He was outside playing Pokemon Go on the morning of April 3rd when he spotted the spoon near a school. And he said, it's a great way to get on experience things you may not see every day. And he's, I mean, I think it's kind of fun that people go out and do it. But he was like playing Pokemon and he found this big spoon. And he was like, I thought, what's this big spoon doing here? And so then he remembered the night before he'd heard about it on the news. So they finally got this, they got the spoon back. Long story short, they got the spoon back. And it was because this guy was playing Pokemon Go. They should turn that into an ad. Caitlin Clark, Iowa's Caitlin Clark, has shot down the idea of visiting the White House with national champions LSU. She said, quote, that's for LSU. Good for her. And she also kicked back all of the criticism against Angel Reese, who was getting a lot of heat because she was trash talking. And Clark said, I don't think she should be criticized at all. She was like, she goes, I compete and she competes and everyone trash talks. Good for Caitlin Clark. Good for her. We got a lot more on the way. Stay with us. As colleges and universities across the country hold their graduations, I'd like to highlight a place where students receive the best classical liberal arts education in America. And when these students graduate, they've studied the great books, the history of Western civilization and of America, and the meaning and history of the Constitution. Can you guess who I'm talking about? I'm talking about Hillsdale College. Hillsdale was founded in 1844 to offer the kind of education needed to preserve civil and religious liberty, and holds true to that mission while refusing to accept one penny of taxpayer funding, not even indirectly in the form of student grants and loans. Hillsdale students also abide by an honor code, which ensures a unity of purpose and fosters lively, civil, and intelligent debate. See for yourself and learn from Hillsdale for free through their influential Speech Digest in Primus and by taking online courses on American history, the Constitution, and other subjects. Find out more at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. ForHillsdale.com. Join the battle over education for our country's future today.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Time.
But I will say something else. When you're losing by 10 points, there is a messaging issue, and abortion is still an issue. And we can't allow the Democrats to define Republicans and put millions of dollars up in lies and have it go unanswered, because the lies become the truth if they go unanswered. We have to put the Democrats on the defense on this issue, talk about the fact that they support gender selection abortions and due date abortions. It was an issue in 2022. The RNC raised the flag. I'm a suburban woman. I know this is an issue. I hear it with my friends, with my young daughter. This is not an issue that's going away for our party in a post-Dobbs world, and we can't put our head in the sand and think it's going to heading into 2024.
So that is Ronna McDaniel, who is trying to explain what happened with Wisconsin last night. Welcome back to the program. Your crabby curmudgeon here with you, Dana Lash. I declare a war on cedar and all tree pollen. By the way, I appreciate your patience with me. I have to keep my voice kind of even keeled because I am super allergic to tree pollen. And it's tree pollen season and it's super high. So we're keeping it low keel to kind of protect the voice a bit so we can power through the week. So Last night, I made mention of this yesterday. I'm so glad that the media was trained on the motorcade and the Doors all day yesterday, even on cable news networks that you watch. And nobody paid attention really to what was happening in Wisconsin. And there were a lot of really good people there that did a lot of really hard work and did, you know, quite a bit to change the trajectory. And I'm looking at this because you have a Supreme Court that's been taken over by, you know, progressives now in Wisconsin. And I was looking at, you know, how, I mean, it's the progressive won by a pretty stunning amount. You're not going to be competitive losing Pennsylvania and losing Georgia and losing Wisconsin. It's just not going to happen. And it is incredibly frustrating to see people focus on, you know, we can juggle more things at once. And also there's 30% voter turnout. I don't understand how we have, golly, we are our own worst enemy on the right. We really are. So we have this Supreme Court race. The voters in Wisconsin elected the far left progressive, tilting the now ideological makeup of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. She currently serves on a lower court. Judge Janet Protasiewicz. And Daniel Kelly was her opponent. He was appointed to fill a vacancy on the Supreme Court in 2016. He lost the election in 2020 to retain his seat. He's worked as a lawyer for the Republican Party in the time since he left the bench. With 85% of the vote in, she had 55 to his 45. And it just didn't go too well because apparently, Audio Soundbite 19, you can tell this was a very bitter race. This is Daniel Kelly last night. Listen.
And it brings me no joy to say this. I wish that in a circumstance like this, I would be able to concede to a worthy opponent. But I do not have a worthy opponent to which I can concede. This was the most deeply deceitful, dishonorable, despicable campaign I have ever seen run for the courts.
Now, the left really worked on him with ads because there was, I'm going to pull this piece up. NBC had a piece. They were saying Trump ally with ties to fake elector scheme advances in Wisconsin Supreme Court race. They ran this big story. They were going after him because he apparently worked with the Trump campaign after the 2020 election with the Stop the Steal stuff. And NBC was saying they reported on this at the time. And of course, you know, the left was running all kinds of ads about it. And then at some point in the campaign, Kelly began to distance himself from his clients. He began kind of walking away from, you know, the stuff that he had did there because he was trying to win an election. He needed to win. He wanted to win. And that's what he was trying to focus on. And he had been asked about it and they just sort of distanced themselves. And they were saying that he believes that, I think a spokesperson told the Journal Sentinel, I think this was Red State or NBC, that, Kelly spokesperson Jim Dick told the Journal Sentinel that Kelly believes Joe Biden is the duly elected president of the United States. And he said that Kelly's beliefs about the election were not necessarily aligned with what his clients believed and said it's a maxim in the legal profession that the views of clients are not attributable to their attorneys. That's the correct take. There's nothing wrong with his statement. There's nothing wrong that anybody should have with his statement. So as if it wasn't bad enough that we had this fallout in Wisconsin, there were a lot of operatives on the right that were running crazy on social media saying, well, this is what happens when you walk away from the Trump campaign, etc. I mean, too many for me to overlook. That is not the way forward. That is not how to deal with this. I mean, I'm not trying to be doom and gloom, but I cannot be more serious when I say that this is it. 2024 is it. After that, ESG is going to be able to take hold, fait accompli. We're going to be, you know, that much closer to a central bank digital currency. energy, the Green Deal, all of this other stuff, further diminished influence around the world. I mean, that's it. It becomes entrenched at that point, and I honestly don't know a way back. I'm being real. This is the election. This is it. I've never actually believed that about an election before, but I believe it about this because that's how far gone it is. And it may not seem like that to people, but when you see these policies that have been already been able to take root and how difficult it is to root them out, I just don't know how you come back from a loss in 24. So people are focusing on the wrong things, and everybody's got to get on the same page with these issues here in terms of what is most important. Personalities are not important. The policies are. I don't care who it is. And it's so damn early in a primary to be doing this. It really is. This is a battleground state for Republicans. This is bad. And I don't want this to be the canary in the coal mine. Shockingly, I haven't seen anyone on the left report it like that. There's a bigger story here that I don't know if people are ready to have a conversation about, though, on the right. Kay knows what I'm talking about. There's a bigger story here that a lot of people are not ready to have that conversation over because it's uncomfortable. People feel like they're being personally attacked if it's brought up. They feel as though their judgments are being called into question when none of that's actually happening. But, you know, people feel that way anyway. But at some point, it's got to happen. So what this means for Wisconsin in 2024, nothing good for Republicans. Nothing good. Now, in Chicago, Brandon Johnson, the community organizer backed by Chicago's teachers union, he won the mayoral race. He beat fellow candidate Paul Vallis, who had the backing of Chicago's police union. Now, Vallis called Johnson to concede the election. He says that, you know, hopefully better days are on the horizon. They're not. And this is all to replace Lori Lightfoot. This guy, it's been said by people who live in Chicago that Lori Lightfoot talks a good game to her progressive base, but that this guy does what the progressive base wants. He had previously talked about defunding the police. He was hardcore about it. He eventually tried to run away from that during the campaign. He wants to raise taxes and spend it on social projects that he thinks, you know, spending money on people is going to be what reduces crime. I don't know how that works, but now Johnson says he's going to promote 200 new detectives. He said he's going to try to deal with the crime issue, the crime epidemic. I just don't know how this is going to work. It seems like they traded, you know, they went from the frying pan to the fire. That's what it seems like. That's bad. Super bad. So this is all what was happening. Now, I know Republicans don't really have any plays in Chicago. And the Republican Party, you know, when we played that soundbite of Ron McDaniel, I got so mad when I heard that this morning. I got legit mad when I heard that. Because cities like Chicago, et cetera, it's messy. Because you don't show up is why. Our voter turnout blew in Wisconsin. I would imagine that, you know, if there was a really good ground game and people really focused on Illinois, you know, you could see that and you could eventually look, if Democrats can flip Colorado in two election cycles, don't tell me, because that was for 63 years Republican ran. Don't tell me that it can't be done for Illinois. You have to have the will. You have to have the will to do it. And you have to have the gumption. And I don't think Republican leadership has either. They just see areas, oh, that's safe blue. We're not going to cede any grounds there. You don't see Democrats doing that. Democrats will toddle or stomp into the middle of Texas, and they'll run somebody named Beto O'Rourke, a white-as-rice Irishman who appropriates Hispanic names as his nickname so that he can pander and cosplay to certain demographics within Texas. And they are proud of it. They run someone like him. They'll run someone like Wendy Davis. They do not bat an eye at it. And they'll keep doing it. They'll run a failed candidate 2 and 3 times. Because they don't care how it looks. They only care about registering voters. They only care about priming the ground for the crop. That's all they care about. Republicans are so worried about how it looks that they don't do anything, which looks even worse. Now, I was thinking today how I pretty much loathe almost everyone and everything in politics. And after watching the way that some of the stuff went yesterday, I felt completely vindicated in those feels. Like in Chicago, I can't tell you the number of times I hear activists in Chicago saying that we have the GOP didn't even try. They don't even try. And now, here we have this. Now we have this situation. You could at least have gotten maybe a moderate kind of candidate there. And as far as Wisconsin, Ron McDaniel sitting here saying, "Oh well, it's about messaging. It's abortion. You know, abortion's an issue." That's a cop out. Republican leadership are trying to say that, "Oh well, our messaging on abortion. You know, abortion's still a big issue." That is such. It's a dodge to hide laziness. Florida Republicans ran on protecting people, protecting life against taxpayer-funded abortion on demand. And they included exceptions, whatever. They ran on life. And they won by a historical margin. There is not a Democrat in statewide elected office in Florida today. It hasn't been like that for 100 years or more. Republicans won Miami-Dade. They won Palm Beach counties. And you have a governor in Florida now who signed into law the six-week ban right as he signed in to stop experimental surgical mutilation on healthy teens, right as he was slapping Disney because they were getting cronyist special treatment against all other businesses, in addition to signing permitless carry, all in the same week. So it's not about messaging. It's about the will to do it. That's a dodge by Republican leadership, and a shameful one at that, about messaging. Well, it's still an important, good grief. This is why we lose. I have more to say about this, but I don't have anything else nice to add right now. The KS7 from Kel-Tec might be short and slim on the outside, but it's long under the hood with its 18.5-inch barrel packed into its bullpup design. It's ready for home defense, backcountry hiking, or anywhere you need a compact 12-gauge shotgun. The KS7 is lightweight with a magazine capacity of 6+1 or 7+1, depending on shell size, easy to handle with rear loading and downward ejection, and standard carry handle that doubles as a sighting solution. Every KS7 produced at Kel-Tec is made in the USA by a team who takes pride in their work and believes in respect, family, and the right to bear arms. Every KS7 comes with a lifetime warranty with proof of purchase as original owner. Defend what matters most to you with the KS7 shotgun available through Kel-Tec. Learn more at KeltecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com. And sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KeltecWeapons.com.
Red meat, black coffee, truth telling. The Dana Show.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Is the indictment of your predecessor politically divisive?
So, reporters, for those of you listening to the radio show, unable to check out the simulcast of the show, that's on YouTube, Facebook, or Channel 347 DirecTV, if you're listening around the country or streaming, that was Joe Biden being asked by a whole bunch of reporters, so do you have anything to say about, you know, they were asking about the indictment. Like, the one question you can kind of hear was, is the indictment of your predecessor politically divisive or divisive? And he just kind of smiled. He grinned really, really big.
Like an evil grin.
It was like the Grinch, but not like when the Grinch was ruminating over his scheme, right? It was one of those types of grins. That's kind of a rhetorical question. I mean, clearly it is. I just, like, listen to this. You have audio soundbite 8, Van Jones on this. All these people, None of whom think that they think that Bragg blew it here. Listen,
I worry. I mean, look, if this is the only pebble that gets thrown at Donald Trump, it's a very small pebble. If it's the first pebble in an avalanche, of other indictments that strike more to the heart of, I think, people's core concern about Donald Trump, which is his threat to democracy. So if this is the first pebble, the next one is about the election interference in Georgia. The next one is about the coup, the insurrection, January 6th. The next one's about him hoarding these documents and why.
I mean, because that's not what that was. I don't think that people who have lived in places of freedom and have only read about coups and then online or seen footage on television, clearly some of these people have no idea what a coup is. I mean, judging just by how he was describing it here, there was nothing. I mean, there was nothing. Now we're going to play coming up. I'm going to play that soundbite where Bragg was saying that the indictment doesn't specify the other crime because the law doesn't require it. It literally is. You know how Pelosi said you got to pass it to find out what's in it.
Yeah.
You got to prosecute it to find out what the charges are. I mean, is this not backwards? I mean, it's rhetorical too. Of course it is. So we're going to get into all of that. Plus, what happens? How am I going to deal with a CRT message being taught in my kid's school? Oh, yeah, that happened. Stay with us. Americans have had it. They're done supporting companies that rake in hundreds of millions, sometimes billions of dollars, while trashing the country that made their success possible. Until recently, we had to take it. But companies like Patriot Mobile are building a whole new economy, one which embraces the values that made America the greatest country on earth. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks. Plus, they offer a coverage guarantee. If you're not happy with your coverage, you can switch to a different network for free without changing carriers. With Patriot Mobile, their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them right now at 878-PATRIOT. Get free activation today using offer code Dana. We should stand together and support companies that share our values. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
So let me say as an initial matter that the indictment doesn't specify that because the law does not so require. In my remarks, I mentioned a couple of laws, which I will highlight again now. The first is New York State election law, which makes it a crime to conspire to promote a candidacy by unlawful means. I further indicated a number of unlawful means, including more additional false statements, including statements that were planned to be made to tax authorities. I also noted the federal election law cap on contribution limits.
But why weren't there those crimes charged? Why wasn't he charged with those crimes?
Well, we I'm not going to go into our deliberative process on what was brought. The charges that were brought were the ones that were brought. The evidence in the law is the basis for those decisions.
Well, I'm not going to actually tell you what the law is, what we charged it with. No, we're not going to talk about it. We've got to prosecute it to find out what's in it. That's ultimately what he said. Welcome to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. Top of our second hour. And this, I mean, I just don't know. I know I've said this before, but I'm still trying to figure out how in the world Alvin Bragg is going to make this case actually stick with this, because the charges are so ridiculously shaky. And Nick Arama over at Red State had a good piece on how really the only felony, if you were trying to get a felony out of this case, the only felony is honestly Alvin Bragg and his office leaking out all of this information headed up to yesterday. I mean, he's not specifying what the second criminal act is that elevated this to a felony. I just don't see the judge buying it. I'm not the only one who doesn't see the judge buying it. There are a lot of people on the left who also do not see the judge buying this. And it is, I just, like I said, I think this falls apart before it goes anywhere in court. They're not, apparently, too, this isn't going to be until, December, Kane, I think is what they had said. Golly. I told you they want to fatigue you. They want to drag all of this out. They want to drag all of it out as long as possible. That's their whole point. That's what they want to do. They want to drag it out as much as absolutely possible. That's it. Now, I know some people are saying, well, you know, that Cohen's case comes into this. I mean, I think maybe, I mean, we really were just kind of speculating. But I don't see this going anywhere. Now, there may be something that comes from the Mar-a-Lago case. There's a rumored indictment about that. There's, of course, the Georgia case as well. So we'll see what happens. But it is, it's going to be, it's difficult for Trump campaigning. And I know that a lot of people initially see this as a huge win. They think it's a win for his campaign. But this is, the media's playing the long game here. And they understand that voter fatigue is real. And they also understand that chaos will wear you out and make you stay home. Case in point, Wisconsin last night. And it's not just that. Go back to Georgia special election. And it's not just that. Go back to some states in 2020 where turnout was a lot lower than it was in 2016. There's a lot of data on this. I've been reading it over the past couple of days. They're playing the long game. And I don't think many on the right in commentary, or at least that I've seen, are noticing this. Some have, but not everybody has. And I hope it's not too late when they do. Now, I was very entertained. Newsbusters does such a good job. They had a headline, here are just 10 of the dumbest moments on CNN from the arraignment. It was actually funny. It was ridiculously funny. For instance, we'd noticed this yesterday, they had a boat in the Hudson, right, to get the plane. Was it Trump Force One to get that flying over? And they were all going crazy. They brought Nepo Baby, what's her face? The Griffin lady who was she worked with Mike Pence, and she was, Newsbuster said, bragging that she had been in a motorcade with him more times than I can count. And this is a much smaller motorcade than he is used to. Like, that was a thing. Right. Saying that they were going on and on about the extraordinary helicopter shots. Like, apparently they said that a million times. They said hundreds and hundreds of cameras here for this incredible scene. It's crazy. And then how they were giddy when they're like, oh, he's technically under arrest. And then everyone was talking about how he had to open the door for himself, apparently, leaving the courtroom. There were like 8 different quotes about that, and apparently like a 10-minute conversation about that on CNN yesterday. Thank heavens that Newsbusters was watching so we don't have to. I mean, I even have my limits, folks. It was just insane. Listen to this. This is audio soundbite 1. Here's a super cut. Here's just some of the ridiculous highlights yesterday.
It's a sad day for America. Hard stop.
This is no time for celebration. I think it's sad. I
have fought Trump for a long time, but I'm sad that this has happened.
Oh, shut up.
How are you feeling about a historic day? It's sad.
And this is a day of profound sadness that an ex-president is indicted, but it's also a time to celebrate.
Because it's a sad moment to see a former president have to do this, even though we feel it could lead to justice.
Oh. If you don't see this, it's a sad day for America.
It's a sad day for America.
It's a sad day.
Well, I don't think anybody can consider it a good day.
Regardless of anything, it's just really sad.
Sad. But, there was always that. It's a sad day. They say that as a way to be jerks in the next part of the sentence. That was the whole thing. Now, just on and on with it. Oh, craziness. This is interesting, too. Audio soundbite 16. An NBC News reporter confronted Bragg about how the previous DA and all the federal prosecutors, not one of them wanted to pursue charges. Listen to this exchange.
Mr. Bragg, Garrett Hake with NBC News. Your predecessor took a hard look at this case and decided not to charge it. Federal prosecutors took a hard look at this case and decided not to charge it. Do you believe you have new evidence that led you to decide to charge this, or why now?
As I just mentioned, we have had available to the office additional evidence that was not in the office's possession prior to my time here. And as to your part of your question about the federal, we have a distinct and strong, I would say profound, independent interest in New York State. This is the business capital of the world.
Interesting. Now, I have a couple of other things I want to make sure that we, I know we're coming back to it, that I want to get into as well. We've had the, I got to talk about this, Will Gray. I hate everything. This is why aliens don't visit us. By the way, I appreciate your patience, too, with my, keeping my voice even keeled today. I have crazy allergies to tree pollen. It makes my throat swell up. It's crazy. So we're just dealing with a little bit of that today. All right. So first and foremost, NASA, guys, has hired its first diversity ambassador for the benefit of all humanity. That's a real thing. They're hiring not one, but two diversity champions. It's part of their CRTDEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Now, I'm going to be honest, when I first read this headline, because, you know, it's about space, I was like, is it going to be for aliens? Like, are they bringing on, like, a Klingon or something? Like, that's going to be, you know, in order to foster a more normalized relations with us and some sort of, I don't know, otherworldly universal species? I don't know. The announcement, they said they announced their first one, Steve Si, and then Elaine Ho is the next associate. So they said that they need a are they having a problem with the diversity? Right. I mean, you're a space agency, right? So these are, if you're NASA, doesn't this mean they're taxpayer-funded positions? Isn't that what that means? I mean, it's NASA. So they said that they kept going on and on about the diversity. Just get in space and find aliens. I don't care what you do. I just get up into space. Find us some aliens. But they keep going on and on about the diversity and inclusion. Da, 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 da. Like, for instance, they said that because they came under fire because they were proposing a rule previously that was requiring federal contractors to disclose greenhouse gases. It's all about the ESG stuff. Their greenhouse gas emissions. But they, their statement, because they have a Twitter account, they've been pushing diversity like for Women's History Month. Nobody cares. Nobody cares about this. They act like women were just created and plopped here on Earth all of a sudden brand new, that humanity has not been dealing with women for, I don't know, since humanity's existence. Can you imagine having to tell somebody that your job is being a diversity ambassador? I would laugh in your face. A diversity ambassador? Jeez. And it's for a government agency. I mean, I don't know. I what do you do? Diversity. Well, how did you get that job? Being diverse. What? Yes, being diverse. I got the job because I was being diverse. That doesn't even make any sense. I have a degree in diversity. Like, what does that mean? Like women's studies. I don't understand. It's like, these are stupid. It's all about actually pushing division. See, it's cyclical. It's hurt and rescue. It's about pushing division so that you can create an industry for yourself to claim that you want to fix the division that you're actually pushing. That's what it's about. These people are thinking they're so smart. All right, so coming up, a couple of things. Never think that your kid's school, no matter what kind of school it is safe from CRT and DEI. So we had a little issue with our school with critical race theory stuff being promoted in a class yesterday. We're going to talk about that. That's kind of the downside with having your mom in radio. So we'll discuss that. We also have more politically correctness, woke, etc. And then more of what we can expect for 2024.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
My friend over at Yid with Lid has this headline, which it's almost unbelievable, but it's true. College has a student arrested for carrying a musket for a Civil War demonstration. It's a Daily Beacon. A freshman named Brandon Dowd was apparently absurdly accosted by, you know, campus cops, but officers saw him carrying a musket on campus on March 29th. He worked with the student works with National Park Service, and he was portraying a Civil War soldier. They were going to film a Civil War battle event, and he also participates in fundraising to preserve battlefields. And they said that he had the musket bayonet and on his person, and apparently they lost their minds. And they set an April 4th arraignment for him. He was completely innocent. They were trying to charge him with a misdemeanor. But he literally is a Civil War reenactor. And and apparently, from what one piece says, it wasn't even operable. And he was there at the request of the National Park Service. They were filming. Oh my gosh, you can't even make this stuff up. Seriously, people, come on. Now, in Tennessee, this comes on the heels of that. It's really pretty much like a riot, an insurrection that broke out in their capital. A bunch of leftists stormed into the Capitol, and they were shoving the security, shoving police. Two Democrat lawmakers were stripped of their committee assignments and had their access to legislative facilities restricted earlier this week as punishment for their role in this riot that broke out within the Capitol, inside the Capitol building, that brought all business to a halt. Apparently, it had to do with Justin Jones, Representative Justin Jones of Nashville, and Gloria Johnson of Knoxville. They, along with Justin Pearson of Memphis, they interrupted legislative business. They were leading protesters and encouraging them. And these were the videos that you saw where people were getting shoved and hit and all this stuff. It was just wild. Also, the weather app, maybe you noticed this. I've definitely noticed this. Have you noticed the weather app really isn't working on your phone very well? Okay, so there's something with it. Something to that. In fact, Apple is aware of it. So apparently it's down for a lot of people. It shows no data if you try to open it. Their status dashboard, Apple status dashboard, says that there's an ongoing issue with the app. They said some users are affected, that it was overhauled totally with iOS 16. And apparently after they acquired Dark Sky, they shut the Dark Sky app down completely. And so I think they're still trying to iron out some of the difficulties in merging. It's what the article reads like. So there you have that. And also, one last thing. Dark money is going to be coming in from a Swiss billionaire to liberal causes, according to the Associated Press, the Berger Action Fund. I know, more non-American groups trying to influence American elections. Stay with us. We got more in store.
Of all your favorite talk hosts, one of these is not like the others.
The Dana Show.
Firstly, it enables the Attorney General to create a 2S LGBTQI plus community safety zone to prohibit within 100 meters of the property any homophobic, transphobic act of intimidation, threat, offensive threats, offensive remarks, protest, disturbance, and distribution of hate propaganda within the meaning of the criminal code. It also comes with it a penalty of $25,000 if prosecuted successfully.
This is like, what is that? The ad, the campaign from the 90s, United Colors of Bennington, right? Oh, or it's like the new millennial YMCA group ad. I don't know. That's in Canada. So that audio came from Canada. That's a Canadian official saying that they want to criminalize protests and offensive remarks about drag queens. And it's the Canadian politician, she uses they, them as the pronoun. She uses incorrect grammar as her pronouns.
That's correct.
I just don't do incorrect pronouns. That's bad grammar. Just can't. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, your bemused curmudgeon fighting, raging against the cedar pollen, all tree pollen, really. So it has me a little bit today. You can kind of hear we're keeping everything kind of even keeled so we can go all through the week. But this is, they don't have free speech in Canada.
No, they don't.
I cannot imagine. It is so ingrained in our psyches. I can't imagine not having free speech. I can't. It's impossible. But they don't have that. So they had all these men dressed up as women standing behind her and talking about wanting to criminalize protests and offensive remarks. But see, that's the thing. When you're talking about the word offensive, it is so differently defined by people according to where their realities are, right? where their politics are, where their ideology is. Because if you don't immediately agree with and validate their self-perception and validate it by going along with it, anything less than that is considered phobic, then it's offensive. It's classified as being offensive. Not refusing to alter your reality to accommodate their perceived reality is considered offensive. I mean, no one ever talks about why that accommodation doesn't go both ways. That's not allowed because, see, you're not a protected class, which is why I reject the whole visibility slang, the phrases and all of that stuff. It's the most protected class of people in the world, in the country. And so all of this, it's so pervasive. So we had an issue. I actually have to talk to folks today about this. We had an issue in my son's class yesterday. And I'm just like all of you. I got to deal with this stuff too. And it was in a Bible class. I know. See? I mean, it's in Texas. So my son came home from school and he was very, very disappointed, I should say. And he immediately came in and was telling me everything that was happening in this class. Now, you know, of my two boys, my youngest son is very much, he's very Vulcan, like with his logic and reasoning. They both pretty much are, but the youngest particularly so. He's the one who just sort of sits back and watches it and then makes his move. You know, he is very, you know, he takes everything in. But he's also, I mean, this is the, just to give you insight into the character of my youngest son, he did not like one of his Bible teachers previously. And so they have to take notes in all their Bible classes. And so he would actually take notes where his teacher was wrong and back it up with scripture. And he would try to turn that in for notes. And then we were constantly getting called to the principal's office. And we had to deal with it. And I'm like, well, where's the lie, though? Because this is true. I mean, he's coming at this purely from, you know, an academic and scriptural perspective. And he's pointing out where he is wrong according to logic and scripture. And he's backing it up with verses. So I fail to see what the problem is here. He's doing the work. So it was allowed to stand. And so, and I'm not, by the way, I'm not the parent who immediately will, you know, I'm not the parent who rushes to condemn the world if I think that, you know, if one of my kids, you know, were ever to behave badly or something like that. I mean, we run a pretty tight ship. But he came, so it was unusual. He had never come home from school and got like launched into kind of a rant before. It took me by surprise. And he comes in and I'm working. He comes in, he's like, Mom. And he was talking about how they had this speaker come into their Bible class. And the speaker was talking about things that Christians should be concerned about in the world, right? And my son said, you know, interestingly, not one of those things concerned the breakdown of the family. Not one of those things, it didn't include any of that. It didn't include any kind of mental health. It didn't include any of that. So the speaker lectured them on a number of issues and brought up the phrase, and was using the phrase, gender equity. He was pushing climate change, gender equity. He was talking about, quote unquote, gun violence. And he apparently was remarking how, I guess, intimating that students, certain students, because of their skin color, don't have to worry about being pulled over or don't have to have the talk from their parents about how to deal with police, which is, I thought, one of the most entitled and inherently racist things I think I've ever heard, because everyone has this conversation with everyone, with their kids, with everyone. Because you want your people and your family to understand how to deal if you're pulled over and how to handle the interaction. And said that the wage gap was real, was spouting off inaccurate talking points about how, oh, the biggest killer of kids today is guns and all this stuff. And my youngest son had said, I wanted to walk out and I almost did. And I told him, I said, you should have. If you felt that strongly, you should have. And it wasn't just him. All his friends were pretty upset as well. And of course, you know, mothers talk after they start hearing from their kids. Mothers start texting and start talking. So I talk with the school later today because I'm like, what is the vetting process when you're bringing speakers in for people's a Bible class of all things? And if you're going to approach it from a biblical perspective, then you're taking on the yoke of the shepherd. And you realize where in scripture you are told that you have a responsibility when you assume that mantle. And when you are speaking to students, to other people's children, you should be speaking from an area of your expertise. And none of the stuff that I was hearing, either from my child or any of the other mom's kids, because other mothers and fathers were also pretty upset over this, none of that sounded like expertise. It sounded like someone went to every town and decided to run off a list of talking points. Like, for instance, the number one killer of kids. Do you know how they define kids? Do you know what metric they're using? They're citing CDC, which includes 18 and 19-year-olds as children. And when you break down with the FBI, UCIs, the UCRs, the crime reports, 18 and 19-year-olds that are involved in drug and gang activity drive the overwhelming majority of that. They conflate it and say children as a whole to try to gaslight you into being terrified of mass shootings in schools every single day. It is evil and disingenuous that they play upon your fears this way. And it's not scientific, nor is it Christian to push it, especially in a Bible class. So we're having a conversation later today. Because I'm particularly aggravated because it was presented through this perspective of a Bible class, as though this person was somehow, you have to listen to me, because it was like an appeal to an authority that was not given. You could add an anointing that was not there. And it angers me because of that appeal to authority, which I feel is disingenuous. So we're going to have conversations. And I think, too, when you present something like this in this context, I feel that falls short of a Christian expectation in a Bible class. So we'll see how this goes. Because I'm not having this stuff. And it's not, and you shouldn't have this either. No matter where, it's so pervasive, absolutely everywhere. It is everywhere. You do absolutely have to be on guard and know what the truth is in every single scenario. I get, it is frustrating. A parent's job is tiring. Doesn't it feel as though, as a parent, you have so many more things to look out for than you ever did? I was listening to a friend of mine. Their mother was remarking on this and saying, gosh, I feel like, she had said, I sometimes feel like we had it easier with you kids. And that really struck me. I was like, what? Really? Really? Do you think that came?
Yeah.
You think our parents had it easier?
I've never seen it that way. I've always thought of it being harder for my parents.
Yeah, I did too.
In every aspect.
I totally did.
Every aspect.
I mean, they had to worry about razor blades and candy.
Oh my
gosh. I'm kidding. Remember that though, right?
Tylenol.
Jeez,
remember that?
Right? Oh my gosh. All right, so I have a couple of other things I want to make sure that we're hitting as well as we roll towards Florida Man. Have you heard? Get this. AOC was suspected of is being accused of having a burner account on Twitter. And ladies and gentlemen, it is a doozy of an account. The account was called Zaza's Mocha, or Zaza Demon, has been deleted, but everybody got receipts. There are screenshots everywhere. They said that first the name Zaza is a short of Alexander or Alexandria. And they said, but that's not what tied the account. This is over a couple of friends' accounts. That's not what tied the account, they said, to AOC. They said that she did that herself by replying as AOC on the account and forgot to switch back to her main account. Oh my gosh. So apparently She defended her rudeness to Libs of TikTok. I think everybody saw that video where Libs of TikTok was serving, just showed her the ethical complaint that she filed, and she was getting a picture with AOC, and AOC realized who she was and was like, you're a homophobic, blah, 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 and then was real nasty. And she responded, quote, NYC doesn't play with bigots and transphobes, and neither do I, on that account. Like, she apparently was messing up on that account and talking. Oh, and now that, and she tried to delete it. And she was like effusive in her praise of AOC, of herself on that account. It sounds like it's her account.
Oh, it is.
You think it is?
Well, I think it is.
I mean, she was calling people see you next Tuesday on that account. Oh my gosh. Oh, y'all. I heard some of y'all clutch your necklaces. No. There was even more stuff. There was more stuff on there. That's just some of it. Whoo, boy. You know, but they get mad at Marjorie Taylor Greene and all. You know, I'm just saying. That's something else. We have more to come, including while everybody's watching Doors and Motorcades, more information about the Burisma board, Ukraine, and Hunter Biden. Oh, we sent a whole bunch more money to Ukraine. We got some GOP. Yeah, we did. We got some GOP stuff, too, coming for you.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So where do you even start? Let's start with this one. It was a Florida man. A Florida man with a dead deer in a school bus has led Pennsylvania police on a chase.
It was a Florida man?
Yeah, it was apparently a naked Florida man. He was from Florida, but he was in, Indiana? No, Pennsylvania. Sorry, he was in Pennsylvania. Yeah, so it's a Florida man from Port St. Lucie. He has no known address in Pennsylvania. A man named Tony J. Saunders Jr., 25 years old, from Port St. Lucie, Florida. No address in Pennsylvania. He had taken... So, okay, this is a story. A long one. I'll make it quick. So, the day before he turned 25, he led Pennsylvania police on a chase. He crashed. He stole a bus. He crashed into a BMW. Killed a deer. No, sorry, wait. He had a different vehicle. Crashed into a BMW. Killed a deer. Then he got out of that vehicle, stole a school bus. He put the deer inside the school bus, and I'm not making this up, to, quote, use as fertilizer, and then led police on a chase, and then he exited the school bus, fled on foot, stripped naked, continued the foot chase, and then when they arrested him, he was smiling. This is real. Okay, so, yeah, and it went through three counties. Early yesterday morning, and it said that everyone was saying, you know, BOLO for the school bus, and they said that officers on patrol spotted it driving through a Giant Foods and Rite Aid parking lot, and they said that they were trying to pull him over. He wasn't going to listen. He was arrested totally nude. He did admit to taking the bus earlier. He admitted to stealing vehicles, crashing into a BMW, and that's when he told police that he took the dead deer. He hit and killed a deer, and he loaded it into the bus for fertilizer. First off, okay, here's my question that nothing in any article I've read about this guy have answered. Oh, by the way, thankfully no children were inside the bus. If they were chasing him, did he kill the deer and then put it in the bus before they started chasing him in the bus? Or were they chasing him and then he just like loads the deer into the bus and then they continue the chase? Like, how does this happen? I've got so many questions. So he was, for the naked school bus thing, he was charged with receiving stolen property, reckless driving, fleeing, resisting arrest. He's being held on a $100,000 bond in York County Prison. His first hearing is going to be on April 24th. And, wow, so he has an active marijuana for personal use case in the same township from 2022. So that's a real story of that Florida man. He wanted the deer, by the way, to fertilize his garden.
Oh, not to eat.
He wanted it as fertilizer. Fertilizer specifically for his garden. And ABC 27 says that there was also a dog that was living in the back of the vehicle with the dead deer.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and he also drove the bus through a chain link fence and got it stuck on train tracks. That's why he had to leave and flee. This story never ends. I mean, they've never found his clothing. I don't know how that happened. Stay with us.
So you see Speaker McCarthy do all these stupid hearings because of false right-wing talking points. So last week, we had a stupid hearing in the Foreign Affairs Committee on this supposed blank check to Ukraine. And the three inspector generals of the Department of State, USAID, and also of DOD testified that there was no blank check. They have been aggressive in looking for fraud, and to date, they have found none.
Well, is he like literally talking about actual blank checks? Is that what he's, is he, because it sounds like he's being kind of literal there. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash here with you. That is Ted Lieu, who is saying that it's false to assert that there is any kind of blank check that's going to Ukraine, and that it's a right-wing talking point to call for accountability. But my question is, you know why people are saying blank check, though? It's because there's no limit that has been given to the public as to, well, how much is how much? How much is enough? What all equipment? What all munitions? What all, I mean, because haven't we just spent, what, another $500 million to them apparently this week? That's, we're told that this newest donation of cash is going for, quote, critical new security assistance. What does that mean? And if you ask for particulars, if you try to sort of, you know, figure out what our money has purchased, then you're called a conspiracy theorist and that it's a right-wing talking point. These are not serious people. Not at all. They're not serious people. So it is just a mystery. Nobody knows. We don't know. Who knows? How much money was sent? How much attention's been paid to, I don't know, Rolling Fork, Arkansas? East Palestine? They were having to fight initially to get any attention, any assistance. I mean, I'm just wondering. We just have no clue. They said that we've sent, what's this list? Rocket launchers, ammunition, all kinds of, you know, but then we're also told that we're paying for other people's pensions.
Yeah, that already happened. This is a part of a $2.6 billion new package that the Biden administration has confirmed. $500 million of it is, you know, in materials. The other $2.1 apparently are going to be procured via contracts and are longer term, according to what I'm reading.
Do people, especially some of the neocons on the right, and I think it's completely appropriate to use that term, do they even realize that one of the reasons why people are so suspicious or critical of all of what's happening with how much is being spent and how much is being sent to Ukraine is because our own politicians, including even some Republicans, have been so vague about exactly what it's going for and have not offered any accountability. And then we read reports like, you know, the New York Times piece had it, you know, where we were apparently covering actual, you know, we were actually covering pensions for people. I mean, that's a, you know, people are broke here and people are hurting here. So I'm just, I don't think that it benefits these politicians to then point fingers at the, you know, people on the right for merely asking questions. It's like they want to shame you out of asking any kind of questions. It's just, it's infuriating. It's like the same way they wanted to shame you. I wanted to point to this story. This has to do with the indictment stuff. And I'm done with this garbage too. This whole garbage surrounding this story. The daughter of a judge. So the judge that's presiding over the Trump case, the Daily Mail had this story. And I hate the Daily Mail. I don't like them. I don't like them because I think they're ideologically shallow. And I don't like them because they clearly don't have a copy editor. I have never read a piece in the Daily Mail where something wasn't so completely foobarred that the story made complete sense without having to pause, remove yourself from it, mentally edit it, and continue. They're making me defend the damn Daily Mail. So this judge in the case in Manhattan, who's presiding over this, his adult daughter, worked for Kamala Harris's VP campaign. She headed up the digital team. And she works for a digital strategies firm that's called Authentic Campaigns. And they work in, I mean, and they're pretty, I mean, it's like a lefty firm. Let's be real. It's a lefty firm. They talk about inclusivity and all kinds of stuff. It's a lefty firm that deals with Democrat campaigns. Like, they were out there retweeting, you know, the progressive that was running against the conservative judge in Wisconsin, which makes me think that they were involved with her campaign. They work with a bunch of Democrat campaigns. So this is the judge's adult daughter. It is completely appropriate to ask whether or not that something like that would perhaps influence. I if the left thinks it's fair game to go after Jenny Thomas, I think this is, it's fair game to ask to make sure that there aren't any kind of conflict of interest here. And they act like this is a child. They're like, oh, someone shared the picture of the judge's child. She's like in her mid-30s. She's not a child. She helped run a vice presidential campaign. So stop. Now, Trump doesn't help himself by talking smack about the judge. He needs to shut up about that. That does not help him. But people sharing a story about this, the left was apoplectic yesterday. Because I think it was Donald Trump Jr. that had shared. I think there are some people who don't understand how the internet works. When you're on Twitter and you share a link to a story for the drive-bys, when you share a link to the story, there's metadata that will fill the singular tweet or the micro post, for the lack of a better way to put it, on Twitter. And that will include, you know, sometimes a description, usually an image. And that's the metadata that the publication controls. So Trump Jr. Shared the Daily Mail link of this story, and they had that image come up. That's how the story was. It's the metadata of the Daily Mail piece. The story, the photo of the judge and his daughter appeared in the tweet. And so, I mean, all of the press went crazy over it, saying that he was endangering the daughter. He posted a photo of the daughter, and they were accusing him of all of this stuff. Like, actual other digital journalists who know better were accusing him of singularly posting this photo, and they acted like he came up with it all on his own. He actually posted the aforementioned written story. It's like I get Hunter Biden laptop New York Post story vibes here. He actually just posted a link to the story that was talking about it, because the Daily Mail has a U.S. bureau. And that's what it was. And they were demanding, oh, you should take this down. I think it's fascinating that all of the people that were bitching and moaning about this story, all of these people were quiet when someone tried to literally assassinate Justice Brett Kavanaugh. All these people were quiet when the left was posting photos and going all kinds of crazy over Jenny Thomas. So I don't know. Someone tried telling me, you need to remove this post. Shut up. I'll post it again if you ask me to do it one more time. I'm not. This is so goofy. We're not doing this. Just asinine. There's nothing wrong with this as a story. Not at all. Especially when you have the firm, which the daughter now works, that's involved in all of these different campaigns and will probably be working against Trump, depending on if she gets involved with, I mean, she ran Harris's digital campaign, her digital aspect of her campaign in 2020. So I wouldn't be shocked if she was part of the Biden campaign going forward. I mean, I wouldn't be. I mean, it's not surprising. So I think that is, not the 2020 campaign. Sorry, she was involved in the previous, her presidential campaign. And was it 2016? No, in 20, and then they're going up to the 2020 primary. So she's been involved in this for quite some time. So she's an operative. She's a Democrat operative. There's no reason, you know, trying to make something out of that. I mean, all these people who ignored the attempted assassination of Brett Kavanaugh, oh, they're so mad because the campaign worker, adult 30-something-year-old daughter got there. Gee, come on. Just insane. Now, a couple of other things I want to hit. I want to get into, let me pull this up. What do I got here? Because I got a couple things. Oh, gosh. So I saw this this come out? I realize that there are all of these. Everybody's got a political action committee. Now, technically, your PAC is not supposed to be talking to the campaign, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, it's pretty much in lockstep with the campaign. I've been seeing, you know, I see PAC ads on Fox going on about certain, there was a Trump PAC that was running hit pieces on DeSantis hadn't even declared. And this Make America Great Again PAC had purchased like a couple $1 million, almost $1.5 million worth of ad time on Fox. And they're running these like hit ads. And now Nikki Haley's SFA PAC is pushing Democrat research opposition against DeSantis using the term "don't say gay" in his parental rights law. So she's this PAC, this Nikki Haley PAC, is using Democrat operative info and language. His "don't say" oh my gosh. This is ridiculous. And they actually say that they go after it. Like, I guess, I don't know, is someone, they literally called it the "don't say gay" law that he imposed on K-12 schools. That's a Nikki Haley PAC that's pushing that talking point. Really? Yes. Interesting. Find me a faster way to have yourself considered disqualified in any kind of primary. Right. I'm done with this. When I see people on the right attack other people on the right more than they attack people on the left, those people are probably either very well-paid operatives or they're plants. I don't trust them as Republicans. I don't have any... Look, this is the last election that we have, I think, before all of this other stuff sets in. I do not have the time or the patience or the interest to sit around filleting all of these entitled politicians' egos. I do not. Nor do you. You're broke. You're fighting this stuff in your kids' schools. We're all dealing with this nonsense. And all these people are treating it like it's a, you know, a prom queen contest. Get real. If this is what your PAC is doing, then I don't think that you should be running. I feel like you got the wrong perspective. You're using Democrat language against like our side when we should be as unified as possible going forward. I'm all for healthy primaries, but using Democrat oppo language ain't part of that.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the tech mogul and the dad, called Crazy Bob, who founded Cash App. He was the Cash App founder. He was found stabbed multiple times in the early hours after extending a business trip to San Francisco. Elon Musk is called to lock up repeat violent offenders. By the way, you know, Gavin Newsom's in Florida today. Yeah, so the dad of two was stabbed multiple times outside of a high-rise building in San Francisco. Bob Lee created popular brands Cash App and Android. He also invested in SpaceX. No arrests have been made at all whatsoever from San Francisco police. They said that they don't have any arrests in connection to the murder of the tech mogul. 43 years old. The place that he was attacked is described as being kind of a ritzier part of San Francisco. I mean, apparently there's like no park that's safe. That's just wild. Bud Light is apparently setting their loyal fan base on fire. You saw Kid Rock take out several cases. And now apparently experts are saying that it was monumentally bad what Bud Light did, and that they are expecting sales to really kind of flatten out. In fact, there are a bunch of distributors who are sharing on social media and establishment owners that they're refusing deliveries of Bud Light because Bud Light chose to do this. They partner with Dylan Mulvaney, the guy who is identifying as a woman. Pretty crazy stuff. Also, this story, Don Lemon. So this came out this morning. You know how he's been in trouble before at CNN, and he was suspended very briefly when he was talking for his comments on women. Well, now Variety has this pretty, wow, scathing report. The headline is this: Don Lemon's misogyny at CNN exposed. Malicious texts, mocking female coworkers, and diva-like behavior that goes all the way back to 2008. And apparently they're saying that people have had problems with it. Now, I know Don, and I've been on set with him before when I was the token at CNN. I've never had a problem with him, but I get how he can kind of have an attitude. I mean, I've definitely seen it, but I mean, he's never been ignorant to me, but I've kind of seen it. But Variety is saying that this goes back to all the way to 2008. And so I think that the left has just done enough with him that they're just like, nah, we're done. We don't need to defend him anymore. Pretty wild. We have more to come. Don't go anywhere. A lot more of the show next.
Want a behind-the-scenes look at The Dana Show? Subscribe to Dana's chapter and verse newsletter for a deeper dive in all things Dana at danalash.com.
Returned by a Manhattan grand jury on 34 felony counts of falsifying business records in the first degree. Under New York State law, it is a felony to falsify business records with intent to defraud and an intent to conceal another crime. That is exactly what this case is about.
No, it's not.
34 false statements.
Oh, for the love, shut up.
Made to cover up other crimes.
No, it's other crimes that you don't.
These are felony
discuss.
Crimes in New York State.
No, they're not.
No matter who you are, we cannot and will not normalize serious criminal conduct.
Except you do when you reduce a quarter of all violent crime felonies to misdemeanors and you coddle criminals. Yo, you absolutely do. Alvin Bragg, man, I'm telling you what. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. So while this was happening yesterday, did you guys hear the latest? Oh, get ready. So you know how with the Biden green agenda, actually the left's green agenda, I really think that they want to sell America out to communist Chinese subservience so that they can make money. They don't care if we live in a communist hellhole so long as they're rich, right? Isn't that how communists always operate? Like the rich communists, they're fine. As long as they love their commie leader, they can do whatever. It's the rest of everybody else that, you know. So while Alvin Bragg was making up charges, it comes out that Joe Biden was pushing for Ukraine to frack gas during his 2014 VP visit. Literally days after Hunter Biden joined the Burisma board and profited from it.
Sure, it's just a coincidence though, right?
Oh, I mean, totally. I'm not going to call him first, son. Hunter Biden joined the board of totally corrupt Ukrainian gas firm Burisma on April 18th of 2014. 3 days later, Joe Biden was aboard Air Force Two for an official visit to Ukraine, right? So one of his senior officials, according to reports, was briefing reporters on the plane that Biden was pushing, quote, medium and long-term strategies to boost conventional gas production and also to begin to take advantage of the unconventional gas reserves that are in Ukraine. There's photos of him there. He was with the former UK prime minister there in 2014, standing side by side at the podium. It would have been a very, very lucrative business move for Burisma because they generated revenues of at least $400 million. And it would have been... And oh, by the way, you know who the senior official was who was briefing reporters on this at the time? Jake Sullivan. The unconventional reserves were a reference to the fracking. And Burisma was one of the few firms in Ukraine at the time that actually had a license to frack gas, right? That whole extraction method. And the official said Joe was promising help for Ukrainian energy firms from U.S. experts. He was saying that, we want to make sure that you're more economically independent from Russia. But it also meant millions of dollars more for Burisma, and his son was on the board. In fact, they ramped up production from 100 million cubic meters in 2010 to 1.3 billion cubic meters in 2018. And that's according to Reuters. This is Reuters reporting. $400 million profit. And they had 35 licenses for hydrocarbon, according to Reuters, hydrocarbon production in Ukraine's main oil and gas basins. That was in 2019. And they started using fracking in 2016. And by 2019, the percentage of wells in which they used this method was 10%. I mean, I'm sure that's just a coincidence, right, Kane?
It is.
guy?
Yeah. And 10%, how much does Joe, I mean, that's a lot of 10% for Joe Biden.
Yeah, I just heard like five coincidences from you just now.
Mm-hmm. Amazing how coincidences work, isn't it?
Crazy.
So crazy. So this was, he was completely making, he was selling influence, and he was leveraging his influence in the office of the vice presidency to make his, to make money for his family with Ukraine and a corrupt company with a corrupt government. But I'm sure there's nothing to worry about there, right? Am I right? Let's just have, let's move them to, but don't they hate fracking though? I thought the left hated fracking also. Huh? Remember?
When we do it.
Yeah, but when Democrats do it, because that was around the time too that they were still screaming about fracking. Notice how that fight's gone away. Where did that go? Huh. Interesting, because I just, I remember back during like 2012, that was the big cause du jour for the left. They were screaming about fracking. You're going to break the earth's mantle apart. You're going to make all of the water catch on fire. You're going to, I mean, oh my gosh, they went on and on and on. Oh yeah, Kane, what did you say? You think the science?
Yeah, the science on fracking probably got out. No, they just can't battle the actual science.
Hmm.
Who knows?
Well, they were wanting to make money off it there in Ukraine. Fascinating stuff. I just, you know, I do find that incredibly convenient. Is there going to be any kind of, I mean, it'd be great to find out some more information about, you know, exactly how much money they made there, and then also take a peek at how much money they've made with China. Speaking of which, China's warning that it's not going to sit idly by over U.S. reps meeting with Taiwan's president. So Taiwan's president is apparently coming to the United States, and China's been threatening to retaliate if the speaker meets with the president today. And they're saying that they're not going to sit idly by, and they're going to encourage McCarthy to cancel the sit-down. China, yeah, China's looking for it. But they did this with Pelosi. Pelosi went to Taiwan, and what did they do? They sounded sirens in their towns, acting like they were being attacked, like physically attacked. And they tried to get all their troops and stuff together, and they were acting as though, oh my gosh, they're, Nancy Pelosi herself is going to attack us. She's going to, you know, come out of the sea like a giant Jaeger and just stomp through all of our easternmost ports in China. That's what they were acting like. I mean, we played the audio at the time of all, do you remember all those sirens going out? There's like nothing happening, literally nothing happening. It's like a nice, you know, clear, pretty day, albeit in a communist country. And people were taking, recording video out of their high rises, all these air raid sirens going off because of nothing, because she was there. So China's mad if Taiwan's leader, they're threatening to retaliate. They're not going to, what are they going to do? Sit idly by? I mean, Taiwan's president, Tsai Ing-wen has been, I mean, visiting everybody, whether she was in Belize, Guatemala. And now apparently, I guess, while she's supposed to go back to Los Angeles on her way back to Taiwan, but she's going to meet with U.S. Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. And I mean, Taiwan has 13 formal allies across the world, including Guatemala and Belize. And as you know, Brazil was one of the latest countries to deny recognition of Taiwan. And we do this, we have this policy of ambiguity where we treat them like they're, and we talk with their leaders like they're independent, but you can't, because you'll hurt China's feelings. China likes to play house and pretend that they own Taiwan. And so China's saying that, oh, there's the Chinese consulate in Los Angeles issued a statement saying that it opposed any form of contact. See, another reason why I couldn't be in public office, I would literally copy, just print out on, you know, copier, my middle finger, and I would send it in an envelope or fax it. Do they do that still? I don't know. To their office so that they would get it real quick. Email it too, just to be sure. I want them to have the actual tangible paper. We have the policy. We like play by this one China policy where China, we pretend that the Chinese claim over Taiwan is legitimate, but yet we don't really endorse it. So it's that's why it's the policy of ambiguity. It's quite vague. Nobody. It's super. It is. But I also understand what is the. If people are trying to keep us out of conflict, trying to thread that needle, I get it. But at the same time, I think China's become is been demonstrating more and more that it takes a lot more to keep them in their seats, so to speak. And they're getting a little demanding and a little needy, and I don't like needy and demanding people. So I like them even worse, less than when they're a country. That's why I like peace through strength. And whether that's, I mean, I just want them to think that the United States would pound them flat like a pancake at any time. Not that we would, but that we could, right? That's sort of the threat. Not that we would, but we could, so don't. That's peace through strength. That's what Reagan pursued. I think that some of the people like Pompeo and others are going way beyond that. It's they want to. They think that the could is should be part of it. We have more to come as we barrel through the end of this third hour. And coming up, LSU's Angel Reese. So, you know, Jill Biden tried walking her remarks back over the whole, we are going to invite Iowa to the White House too. And then Angel Reese said, that's a joke. And all these other people were criticizing. I mean, Joe Biden keeps his head down and allows all this stuff to happen. And Jill Biden toddler stomps out there and just, someone said, well, Jill Biden just cost her husband the black vote. It's kind of funny.
Listen to The Dana Show live on the Odyssey app. Weekdays, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time.
Had a lot of phone calls, and that's why she wants to come out and apologize. But at the same time,
the damage is
I don't
done.
Accept the, I'm not going to lie to you, I don't accept the apology because of, you
Jill,
said what you
Jill
said.
Biden.
Yeah.
First lady.
The wife,
lady.
Yeah.
You said
first
what you
lady.
Said and you meant what
I
you
said what I said, and like, you can't go back on certain things that you say. I mean, you felt like they should have came because of sportsmanship, right? They can have that spotlight. We'll go to the Obamas. We'll see. I'm gonna see Michelle.
That was sad. That was. Whoa. That's far, as the kids say. It's far. I know, man. Woof. That was crazy. Welcome back to the program, Dana Lashier. That was Angel Reese, who was addressing the. She's talking. So this had is the NCAA championship. LSU beat Iowa. And Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark had been trash talking each other. And everybody jumps on Angel Reese for it, which I don't know why, because Caitlin Clark was doing it too. It was the John Cena, you can't see me, hand gesture and all this. And then Angel held up her hand and pointed to her ring finger, which, you know, she was like, you know, my championship ring's going to go here. I mean, that's like, can I be honest? That's like the most wholesome trash talk I've ever seen in my life. Why were people losing their minds over that? For real, why? Like, I'm just like, wait until you guys see football. Like, why were people losing their minds over that? That was the most wholesome trash talk I've ever seen. And trash talk is part of, it's American. It is as American as apple pie. I just, you know, not everybody's Tim Tebow and is, you know, not out there going, you know, Jesus loves you before he just, you know, completely kicks your head off, you know, in competition. You know, I'm just saying, it is... I mean, and people were jumping on her. And so when Jill Biden came out, and Joe Biden's been keeping his head down, nobody knows where he's at. Nobody knows what he's doing. He's been letting all this stuff in Manhattan play out. And Jill Biden comes out there and ruins it all and makes everybody mad at her. She invited LSU and Iowa. She said it's good sportsmanship. And it wasn't. And Angel Reese responded, that's a joke, etc. So Jill Biden, they've been trying to walk this back. I don't know how you walk it back, but, you know, they've been trying to kind of like sort of apologize and then kind of walk it back sort of. And it's just not happening. And so that was Angel Reese's response to that. She was like, we'll just go to the Obamas. Oh, my gosh. I mean, and good on her, though. I love that she was not backing down because she, I mean, why should she? It was ridiculous for Jill Biden to get involved in this and to do what she did. That's so dumb. That's real sportsmanship, by the way. Like when you have Caitlin Clark, she came out there and she goes, no, do not criticize Angel Reese for this. She's like, this is what athletes do. She gets it. She's like, do not criticize Angel Reese for this. By the way, Angel Reese did not say anything personal. She did not attack Caitlin Clark. She did not like get mean or malicious, nothing like this. They were just talking to each other on the court during the game. That's common. And So they asked, this is an AP piece, they had asked Caitlin Clark this, and she's like, no. She's like, do not. She's like, I don't think she should be criticized at all. She's like, everyone knows there's going to be trash talk in the entire tournament. Everybody knows it. And that, I mean, so it was, I can't even believe people were divided. I think it's dumb that anyone was even, that anybody, you had Keith Olbermann, that meathead, go out there, and then Charles Barkley body slammed him. It was amazing. That was on Twitter. It was all on Twitter. So, I mean, I'm glad that Angel Reese, you know, stood her ground on that. Good for her. They can just, they'll just go to the Obamas. She's, now they're talking about not going at all. LSU is like, I don't know if we want to go now. Way to go, Jill. All right, today in Stupidity came.
All right, it is Karine Jean-Pierre. Now, you remember you talked about this yesterday, the Chinese spy balloon, that they actually did get some pretty sensitive information. This is her today, which is why I think this is stupid.
We knew the flight path of the balloon before it crossed the United States. We took precautions in advance to ensure that it didn't get sensitive information.
What?
And when it comes to technology like this balloon, it has limited additive value compared to other means of intelligent collection.
We took precautions in advance to ensure it didn't get sensitive information.
But it literally did figure eights over like military sites.
It was like an entire week going across the United States.
What were the precautions that they took?
Exactly.
I mean,
because there weren't any. She's
lying. Yeah. I'm just like, where are those precautions? Y'all got any more than precautions? Where's that at?
Stupid.
Yeah, golly. Folks, all right. I'm going to be fighting that tree pollen still. Oh, boy. But I'll be back with you behind the mic tomorrow. Make sure you sign up chapter and verse over at Substack. Have a great night. Back with you then.